Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, we weren't intending to do a tennis podcast today, but I woke this morning to a message from Catherine saying, "Oh my God, Barty." And I didn't know what that meant. So I went and had a very quick look, and it said that Ash Barty, age 25, Wimbledon, Australian Open champion, and the reigning world number one, had retired. And I actually had to check the calendar to make sure it wasn't April the 1st and that this was a joke. I genuinely did. But that's how surprised I was at this news. So we've hastily convened Catherine Whittaker, Matt Roberts and myself, David Law and Billie Jean, who's back from her other home with Catherine's brother. Catherine back from Indian Wells. And this wasn't exactly the news you were expecting to be talking about literally about 12 hours after landing, Catherine. It's shocking enough as it is. What's it like with 8 hours of jet lag?
Yeah, I was hoping not to have to be lucid today. This is a bit of a blow in many ways. So bear with me, folks.
It is a huge shock. And yet at the same time, I don't want to be just too downhearted about it because, frankly, it's not about me. It's not about us. We're going to make it about us, I'm telling you. But, I mean, it's about ultimately Ash Barty, who released this news in an interview on her Instagram page that she'd done with Casey Delacroix. And you may remember Casey Delacroix, her longtime doubles partner, a very close friend of hers, somebody who had actually helped her return to the sport after the previous time that she had out of it when she was struggling and she decided to move away from the sport some years ago, and she had 18 months away, and Casey Delacroix eventually said to her, you know, come out and just have a hit with me and let's get out there. And look what it's led to. It's led to years and years of success. And from what we've heard from Ash Barty in her own words today, her fulfilling all of her on-court dreams. And this appears to have really taken hold when she won Wimbledon last year. She said that that was such a dream come true that it changed her perspective. She said she just had a gut feeling and spoke a lot to her team about it, but just felt, I'll give it the Australian Open because I feel like that's one achievement that I've still yet to tick off that I really, really need to tick off. And so she did that. And she won the Australian Open pretty straightforwardly, as we were able to tell you all about during our Australian Open daily shows. But it does appear that it was pretty final immediately. She didn't play Indian Wells and Miami, as we know. She pulled out of those events. She said her body wasn't ready for it. And actually, she referenced her body and in this interview as somebody who knows what it takes to be at the top now and just doesn't have anything left in the tank. And that's a startling thing to hear from somebody who's aged 25 and who just seems such an incredible physical specimen, such a wonderful tennis player. She makes the game look easy, but this was the end for her. And yeah, I was immensely surprised. I've heard one or two over the years, Bjorn Borg moving away from the sport at the age of 26 when he was still at the top. But this is very different, Catherine. Don't you think? This is a player who doesn't outwardly have appeared to have gone through a terrible recent experience or been worn down by it that we could see. But, well, she's telling us something different. What was your immediate reaction to this news?
Well, all I can think about is the fact that she played and won the Australian Open with this in her mind. Okay, it sounds like from what she said in that interview with Casey Delacroix that she hadn't, you know, confirmed or crystallised the decision. But she also made it very clear that it first occurred to her and occurred to her pretty strongly after Wimbledon. And she resolved to have a crack at the Australian Open. But I can't stop thinking about the fact that she won the Australian Open on home soil with this looming over her and the additional pressure of this potentially being her only shot at it and her only reason for still holding a tennis racket. What a woman to have done that and to have set that narrow a goal for herself. I'm going to have one crack at winning the Australian Open and then I'll probably retire. And she just went out and did it. I also can't think about the sliding doors scenario of what if she hadn't lost the Australian Open? Because, okay, she was the favourite, but I don't think it was Ash Barty over the field. I don't think it was, you know, odds on that she was going to do that. It feels like it now, given how comprehensively she did win it and how much better she was than everyone else. But what world would we be in if she hadn't won that Australian Open? We'll obviously never know, but that's how my slightly sadistic mind works. I find myself asking questions to which there will never be any answer. I also am struck by just, you know, the line that Matt pointed out in his tweet about this, you know, there's no right way, there's no wrong way, there's only my way. And, you know, we've had Naomi Osaka recently doing things her way. And I find that really interesting. You know, when men do things their way, they're mavericks and they're mold breakers and they're, you know, blue sky thinkers and they're brave. And when women do things their own way, they're quite often weak or can't hack it or anything like that. Now, I haven't actually read any commentary along those lines about Ash Barty, which I'm very relieved about. I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure it'll exist at some stage in the way that it has about Naomi Osaka. But I think it's just a tremendous show of strength from her to do this. I'm pretty bowled over by it, actually. It is. And I also think, David, just to pick up on something else you said, I think it's okay for it to be a bit about us, for tennis fans to be really sad about this. It's entirely possible to be really happy and supportive of her and really sad for tennis, because it's a huge loss, not just because she as an individual is a great sports person, a great athlete, a great role model, all of that. But just to lose the world's best tennis player, the person against whom, as we were saying just 3 days ago, everybody is measuring themselves. She's the test. She's the yardstick in women's tennis. And that's gone. And I can imagine that leaving, you know, a few other players at the top a little listless for a while. This isn't the way Iga Świątek wants to become the best player in the world. No way is this what she wants. And I can imagine, you know, given what a deep thinking person she is, I imagine she'll really, really think about that, and it'll have a bit of an impact on her. So it's just going to have very deep repercussions in the sport for a little while, I think. And those aren't repercussions that I really want or celebrate. You know, there are rivalries that we'll just never have now. And, you know, I'm mourning the loss of something that we've never had. But I'm also so impressed by her and so pleased by her. And, I'm bowled over by her actually making this decision, because the life of a professional sports person isn't for everybody. You know, she loves tennis and she loves achieving things in the sport, but I don't think she loves the lifestyle that goes with it. And I think that's okay. You know, it's okay to love something but not love all aspects of it. And she has the privilege now, because of her success, to take the bits of it that work for her and enjoy those forevermore and ditch the bits that don't. And wouldn't we all do that in her position if we had the luxury to do so? So more power to her.
So a feeling of bittersweetness, really, Matt. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, I think this idea of conflicting emotions is how I feel. And that was kind of my reaction to the news itself. Like you said, David, very, very shocking to wake up to, very stunning. You know, this is a dominant player in her prime, and we just haven't seen a player step away in their prime for so long. As you said, reigning Australian Open, reigning Wimbledon champion. She's also just, you know, won 25 of her last 27 matches. She hasn't lost this year. She won the Australian Open without losing a set. For that all suddenly to be gone and to be missing from the sport does leave a big hole, for sure. And I think, you know, yeah, there are rivalries that we were talking about a couple of days ago that we were excited about, which we won't see unfold now. And I'll miss watching her game. You know, I loved watching Ash Barty play tennis. So I feel sort of sad in a sort of selfish way that we're not going to get to see all of that. Then on the other hand, you know, it maybe wasn't that surprising when you reflect on Barty's career as a whole and the signals she's given and the way she's lived her career. I never thought she would be one of these players who played well into her 30s. You know, I didn't think she would retire now. But the fact she has, I suppose, isn't as surprising as if this was someone else because of what she's told us. And I do end up feeling happy for her. You know, as she said in that video with Delacroix, she stepped away from tennis before. This is very different. This is much clearer in her mind, much more decisive, I think, and ultimately for a much happier reason because she feels fulfilled now. So, yeah, lots of conflicting emotions. And I think the reason I picked out that quote about, you know, her saying doing it my way, I just think she's changed my perspective a bit on what being a top tennis player looks like. You know, if you're my age, you've lived in an era where records and achievements have been at the forefront of conversation. You know, we've been obsessed with the goat race, haven't we? And look at Serena's quotes and look at Djokovic's quotes. Everything's been about finding the next accomplishment, being motivated by your place in history. You know, why win something once when you can win it 7 times, 8 times, 13 times in Nadal's case at Roland Garros? And all of that is extraordinary. And I love all of that. And that's been the sort of paradigm in tennis for the last few years. But Barty has always been different. And I think it took me a little while to understand that. But I hope I do now. I hope I get Ash Barty a bit more now over the last couple of years. And look, of course she had goals like those champions I've mentioned. She said, Wimbledon was my dream. She's put it out there. She went out. She did it. Of course, she had the sort of qualities that they had in terms of a really ruthless drive to work hard and dedicate herself. You don't get that good. You don't get to the top without having all that. But then she did also have this other way of doing things. And I think the way I would sum it up is she made decisions which allowed her tennis to flourish, but weren't made chiefly with her tennis results in mind. You know, she took breaks. She stepped away from the sport. She didn't play in 2020 when it was really tough to play. And she knew what she was sacrificing there, you know, short term in terms of the tennis. But she also knew what she was prioritizing, you know, her health, her personal happiness, the people in her life, the places she wanted to be, not caring about what other people think. And I respect, you know, the hell out of that.
Quite a lesson in there, isn't there? Not for everybody. As you say, there are people that can do it a different way, but there are probably some people that missed out or miss out in life because they don't remove themselves when it's really difficult.
Yeah, that's it. You know, she balanced what it takes to get to the top, which should never be underestimated, with also having, as you said, the self-awareness, the self-assuredness, the courage to let it go when she doesn't need it anymore, to not be defined by it. Yeah, there's a lot of strength and courage in carving out a different path from those around you, I think. And that's what she's always done. That's what she's doing here. And it's kind of the quintessential Barty move in a way, I think, this.
Yeah, we're doing whole podcasts on this subject, and people are writing thousands of words, and everybody's doing interviews, and yet I felt that 10 words in a tweet from Andy Murray summed this up probably better than anybody I've heard so far, which was, happy for Ash Barty, gutted for tennis, what a player. And that really does sum it up perfectly, doesn't it? I mean, he was one of many. Simona Halep, Kirsten Flipkins, Daria Saville, Shelby Rogers, who was the last person to beat Ash Barty at a Grand Slam tournament, said, this is an Ash Barty appreciation post. The most genuine, kind, gracious and inspirational person to be around. Thank you for growing our sport and representing us in such a classy way. So happy for you. I wish you the best of luck. Very excited the next time we meet will be off the court. Because I think many players suffered at the hands of Ash Barty over the years. Martina Navratilova said, "Dear Ash, you are leaving tennis and the sports world quite speechless and full of praise at the same time. Enjoy this chapter of your life after tennis. We will miss you, your smile and your beautiful game. Be happy, champ. The Hall of Fame is waiting." Angelique Kerber, Tracy Austin, Petra Kvitova. It was just incredible to see this outpouring of emotion from opponents, Catherine, people that have taken beatings at the hands of Ash Barty, and yet not a bad word spoken, and hardly anybody missing. This is somebody that everybody had something to say about.
People whose chances of winning things just went up considerably. Yeah. Yeah, somebody that it's impossible to feel any ill will towards by the sounds of things. Yeah, and that, you know, that tallies with the Ash Barty that we see as well, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, Craig Tizer was right, wasn't he? She won't ever win the US Open with those balls.
Very, very good point. I mean, we'll get onto the subject of whether this is for good in a minute, but assuming it is, Catherine, how will you think of her in years to come, do you think, when somebody mentions the name Ash Barty to you? What will you miss?
Just an absolute rock star. She's retired as the reigning Wimbledon and Australian Open champion. It's unbelievable. Her last match was winning the Australian Open on home turf, having the trophy presented to her by her idol, Yvonne Goolagong. And on a very selfish note, I'll remember the fact that I was there for that. It felt like a piece of tennis history at the time, but now it feels like an even bigger one. That's pretty epic to retire in that way. It's sad in lots of ways we've also touched upon, but how amazing to be able to say I've achieved all my dreams and I'm going to turn my attention to new ones now. Just what a rock star.
And getting to choose when you retire is what all athletes want, I think. And it's quite rare, you know, so often it is injury. So, you know, it feels like a sad moment, but actually I think for her, you know, it is a happy one. She did everything she wanted to do in this sport. And, you know, I hope now she's, well, it's kind of the middle of the night in Australia, but, you know, I hope she's chugging a beer or what was it Goolagong said to her, go wet a line when she had her break. You know, she's going to do all those things. And I bet she'll be, you know, showing people up on the golf course or on the cricket pitch as well in her spare time still. And, you know, I'm kind of excited for her because, you know, really in that video, she does seem extremely, extremely content. And that is what you want at the end of a career. I think, you know, as hard as it was for her to come to this decision, I think tennis in Ash Barty's life is not the biggest loss here. You know, it's Ash Barty on tennis, which is the bigger loss. And that's probably the way around it should be.
But is it over? That's not a question we can ever know for sure at this stage. But there are many, many situations that we've seen in the past. Justine Henin is the other player that retired on the WTA Tour as the world number one in 2008, and she came back in 2010 for 1 year. Kim Clijsters has retired a couple of times and come back. Lindsay Davenport retired, came back. I mentioned Bjorn Borg. He made a number of comebacks. Pam Shriver tweeted today, "Since I never trust a tennis retirement, does anyone think that Ash Barty will be back? And what year?" And she applauds Ash Barty in brackets, but she says, Australian Open 2024 is my guess. Whose second or third comeback from retirement did you enjoy the most, she asks. And she names Martina Navratilova, Billie Jean King, of course, and Martina Hingis. You may remember she left the sport when she was very highly ranked and then came back and played again. I mean, to stop at 25, Catherine, when, unless there's an injury that we don't know about, she has talked about how hard she's taken this physically and what's required, and she doesn't have it anymore. But it's hard for me to believe that if she was happy to carry on, she could carry on for many, many more years, I would have thought, unless there's something I don't know. I have to say that that's young to retire, and there's a lot of life left in that career if she gets the itch again. I mean, and that's her choice. But what do you think? What's your gut feeling?
To say it's young is, you know, just an extraordinary understatement, isn't it? I mean, there are 40-year-olds that haven't retired. She's a whole career younger than them. Mm. I don't think, judging by that video, and I know there's a big part of Ash Barty that she keeps from us and is entirely private and is unknowable, and I respect that. So I could be wrong here. But from that video, it seems to me like it's not in her mind at all that she might come back. I think in her mind right now, it's permanent. But I've been 25. And she's an extremely mature 25. But, you know, 25 is still 25. And things that seem permanent, a lot of things seem permanent when you're 25. And I think permanency takes on a different meaning in your late 20s and early 30s. So while I don't think it is in Ash Barty's mind at all, of course it's possible. Minds change, life changes, things change, and she has got the type of game and the type of raw talent that I think will make it possible should she wish to come back. It just depends on where life takes her. I certainly wouldn't want to. I think her circumstances are very different to every single person you've listed there that's come out of retirement. Mm. I think there's a contentedness about her retirement that I've never really heard before. But of course it's possible. Yeah. Of course it's possible. Things that seem forever at 25 very often aren't.
Mm. I agree about the contentedness. And I would say one of the things that intrigues me is how curious she has been over the last 18, 24 months about how her game matches up against loads of other players. And she's spoken so interestingly about the challenges of playing against some of these other top women and figuring them out. And I love that about watching Ash Barty. That's the thing probably I'm going to miss the most, is seeing these many different types of players with huge weapons of their own getting diffused by the game of Ash Barty and her working them out and figuring out a way to beat them. And I just can't get enough of it. And I feel really gutted that's going to stop now. And I wish her all the best in the world. I really do. And I'm happy for her if she's happy, but I'm personally gutted about that. And I just wonder whether that is something that will just bubble away in her in years to come and make her want to have another go at putting what she's got up against what they've got. But, you know, we'll see. It's all up to her. The one note I'd like to end on, just talking about Ash Barty, Matt, is you mentioned the goat race earlier. And with the goat race, we always talk about Serena Williams because she's got, you know, more than 20 Grand Slam titles. We talk about Steffi Graf, 22. We talk about, in the men's game, Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, and Novak Djokovic, because they've got more than 20. And yet, occasionally, you'll come across somebody who'll say, well, what about Rod Laver? You know, he didn't play in this era, so he wasn't able to win as many. And he won, what, 10 or 11? And Bjorn Borg. And you hear these sort of conversations. Now, she's only won three. But is there an argument that she could be part of that conversation in a way because of her being the age she is and being so different? Do you think of her, do you think, in years to come?
Yes. to quote, sorry to do this, but to quote some what Billie Jean King said to me at breakfast yesterday, the tennis needs more asterisks. Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
You know, those Grand Slam stats need to come with a lot more asterisks than they do. I've had a telling off, a deserved telling off about our focus on the majors. So maybe it should be, you could have a separate metric, couldn't you? Slams won per number of slams, average number of slams played per slams. No, number of slams played per slams won. Goals per game type thing. But that still doesn't solve the too much focus on the slams aspect, which Billie Jean, if you're listening, hope you are. I'm working on. We're all working on. but yes, I'm very up for there being an Ash Barty asterisk, along with all the other asterisks that we ought to be including more in the sport.
Matt, what do you think?
I think I will, you know, remember that when her, I don't know if this is going to sound really cheesy, but, you know, kind of when her star was burning or whatever, it was burning really brightly. You know, I'll remember the last couple of years for how good Ash Barty was at her best. And I will think, you know, trying to line up players at their best that I've seen, I'm sure Ash Barty will come into the conversation for those reasons you've said, David, in terms of the way her game disrupted people. You know, I remember Jessica Pegula saying it at the Australian Open, Ash Barty's in everyone's head. You know, people didn't know how to beat her and they took to the court against her and couldn't deliver their best because she had a game that they didn't experience from other people, and she had a game which kind of took everyone apart when she was at her best. I'll absolutely remember that. I think inevitably conversations around all-time greatness does fall back on numbers and achievements. And yeah, we probably do need more nuanced ways to sort of separate players and think about players. So maybe Barty will be a help in that respect, because she won't have the numbers, but we'll have the image of her playing and how good she was at her best.
Mm. Well, it's huge news, and well, we wish her all the best, and yeah, I'd be fascinated to see if she decides to take up another sport as well. That's another thing I'm fascinated by, because I just think she's clearly so talented. She could do so much. But anyway, it's been a treat to watch her, particularly the last couple of years. There's not been anybody quite like her. And who do you think is going to benefit from this most in terms of picking up the baton now? Do you think there's somebody that wasn't going to get through or maybe accumulate big numbers that might now, because she's the nightmare of all nightmares as an opponent?
Oof. I find it hard to think of one individual. I wasn't thinking of it in those terms. I mean, everybody's, as I said earlier, everybody's chances in every tournament just went up a bit. But I don't think she was everybody's boogeyman, wasn't she? She wasn't any particular player's nemesis.
Wasn't
she
like, was, remove Nadal and Federer wins another six.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't feel like that. She was just, she had become the bar.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's just difficult to contemplate not being on the tour again this year, not seeing her play again this year. I don't think we'll know the true impact of her retirement until the next few months and maybe even years have played out, whether someone takes her place as the dominant number one, or whether, you know, no one's going to win two slams out of three like she's done going forward. But what I would say is that players look to the number one as a standard setter. They look at what they're doing and they look at the number one as an example, really, and someone who raised the bar. You know, you've got to get that good. It pushes everyone else up. Barty being so good has forced everyone else to get better. I mean, Iga Świątek, I'm sure a lot of her improvement is down to her own self-motivation and whatever. But I'm also pretty certain she's been looking at Ash Barty and thinking, I need to get to that level if I want to be winning the biggest titles. So it's a loss for the tour in that respect to lose your best player. But I'm sure, you know, there are so many other good players, they will find ways to keep pushing themselves. But it's going to be a little shocking for a while, I think, not to have Barty around, especially as we go into kind of major season, you know, in a few months' time, where we've got the French Open where she's won and Wimbledon where she's the defending champion. Not to have her there is going to be an immense loss.
Mm. Yeah, she's felt in the last 18 months like a mid-2000s Roger Federer to me in terms of her ability over the field, and I agree, it has dragged up the level, it's going to be fascinating, absolutely for sure.
Maybe Simona Halep will finally get the chance to play first on centre court as defending champion, as she should have done. She should have got to in 2020, but there was a pandemic and there was talk of happening in 2021 because there was no defending champion, but in the end they chose world number one Ash Barty, didn't they? But I always have a sort of slight residual sadness for Simona Halep that
that's a lovely idea.
She never had that honour.
Mm. No, I could imagine that, Wimbledon and the sort of people that might think along those lines. So I very much hope they do. So good luck, Ash Barty.
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Another story that we're just going to briefly touch on, I was going to leave it until Monday if we hadn't have needed to have this show, and that was the injury to Rafael Nadal that we learned about 24 hours after his final in Indian Wells when he was beaten by Taylor Fritz, and we didn't have enough time to get it into Monday's show. But it's a nasty injury. It's a stress fracture of his left rib and has meant that he's going to miss several weeks, and we expect that to include most likely Monte Carlo and Barcelona, which have been two mainstays of his French Open preparation time in the years gone by, dating all the way back to 2005 when he first won Roland Garros. And actually, I got Matt to run the numbers on this and look at the years when he didn't have exactly the same preparation events.
You've made Matt literally sound like a machine there.
Well, he's an amazing machine.
Inputted some numbers into him and pressed a button.
Yeah, and you should see what I got out of it. It's awesome. In 2005, he withdrew from Hamburg with a hand injury, but he still entered Roland Garros with four warm-up tournaments because he played Valencia as well and he won Roland Garros. 2006, he withdrew from Hamburg due to fatigue straight after Rome, but he was unbeaten in Monte Carlo, Barcelona and Rome, and he won Roland Garros. The other 2 years that he didn't play his usual Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Rome lead-up events were 2010 when he withdrew from Barcelona with fatigue, but then he went unbeaten in all the others and he won Roland Garros without dropping a set. And then in 2020, I mean, this is amazing, isn't it? When I see it written down, 10 years later, he then ended up playing just one warm-up tournament ahead of Roland Garros because of COVID. And he lost in the quarterfinals to Diego Schwartzman, but he still won Roland Garros without dropping a set. And then if you look at the years that he didn't actually win Roland Garros, because I was curious to see whether there was any correlation to not having a certain kind of lead-up or whatever it might be, there were 4 years. And in 2009, when he lost to Söderling at Roland Garros, the only loss he had in the lead-up was in Madrid to Federer and the faster conditions there. 2015 was the one where he really was struggling. I remember he couldn't get anything right. He lost in all the lead-up events, and he lost at Roland Garros as well. That was the one where he lost to Djokovic in the quarterfinals. And then in 2016, he was injured at Roland Garros, but he'd won Monte Carlo and Barcelona along the way. But he had losses at the others. And then last year, he won Barcelona and Rome, lost to Zverev in Madrid, and as we know, he lost to Djokovic at Roland Garros. What are your feelings, Matt, based on all your research, what you've heard, the type of injury? I mean, you know, rib injury, that concerns me, I have to say, with his type of game and the amount of rotation he has on that stroke and the fact that he was having to adapt the forehand, wasn't he? Catherine told us in Indian Wells during that final. Is your glass half empty for Nadal and Roland Garros at the moment, or half full?
It's half full because it's Rafa Nadal at Roland Garros and he does have time. You know, I don't know how sort of relevant past experiences are to this because the scenario is different. But 2020 Roland Garros gives me confidence for Nadal, I would say. That was kind of the hardest Roland Garros he's ever had, I think, preparation-wise, and in terms of just the conditions of the event being played in September, October, didn't suit him so well. I would say it took him until the final to play his best tennis. It took him a lot of matches to get it right, but he did find his best tennis, and he won the tournament without playing his best for much of it. He didn't lose a set. That's kind of the event where I think, okay, if Nadal is fit, he wins Roland Garros. But there are big concerns about the fitness. I think, you know, I found it so fascinating that he ended up playing the final with what was a serious injury. You know, he did that in the semi-final. He played a full match and probably a set with a stress fracture to his rib. And that is just, in a way, it's sort of classic Nadal. It's, you know, he wouldn't be the player he is if he didn't constantly push himself to the limit and constantly kind of defy what his body is telling him and what other players, you know, other players would have pulled out of that final, but not Nadal. You just wonder what the long-term effects are. So I am worried about that. I'm also worried about the foot. If he can't compete or play or practice for the next few weeks, because he said before that not playing and not practicing and inactivity has been bad for his foot. So I think that's a definite concern over the next few weeks. And he sounded pretty downbeat in his, well, his tweets, statement about it. You know, he said he was downbeat, he was sad. He was not expecting this. He was not planning for this. He's had such a good start to the year. He was looking forward to the clay. This is a real, real setback. But as I said, because it's Nadal at Roland Garros, because we do still have a couple of months before that tournament starts, I think he can be okay. But it does depend on recovery, for sure. Mm. Are you, how do I put this, David? What was your level of Alcaraz excitement?
Well, given I said he's going to win the tournament already, Nadal or no Nadal, makes no difference.
Okay, fair enough.
look, and I mean, it makes it interesting, but I don't want Rafael Nadal to be a crocked force at Roland Garros. I want him to be fully fit. Mm. And I worry for him with this particular type of injury. I think this is a concern. Catherine, what do you think?
I'm overall pretty glass half full about it. I mean, stress fractures, look, I've not had a rib stress fracture. I've had a hip stress fracture and a shin stress fracture, in fact, twice. I've had a few stress fractures, folks. And they're very, it's not easy to heal, but it's very simple to heal. And it's just full rest. Full rest, and they heal easily. It's annoying, extremely annoying. You know, with my hip, it was absolutely no weight bearing for 6 weeks and I lost my mind. But it was a very, you know, like, remember in Australia how we described with his foot, how emotionally he found it very difficult because there was no sort of, this is your problem, here's your solution, you go through this tunnel and you come out the other end. Well, at least with the stress fracture, assuming there's nothing else underlying going on, there is, you know, that tunnel and another end. My concern with the tunnel is, as you've said, Matt, the foot injury. We know it's an injury that worsens with inactivity. Is there a way that he can rest his upper half and sort of isolate his lower body to keep his foot active? I realise I'm asking questions that nobody here can answer, but these are, you know, the things crossing my mind. Look, seeing what he did in Australia, 3 and a bit months after he was on crutches, from almost a standing start. Okay, he had one warm-up tournament, but he won that from an actual standing start. And that wasn't clay. I still put him as favourite in it for the French Open. And I think so long as he can play Rome and be in decent shape by Rome, I think that's enough. It's a shame for him, the sequencing of events, because I think if he could choose one to skip, it would be Madrid, because I don't think he doesn't like the conditions there. And I also don't think, in terms of their similarity to Roland Garros, they do him all that many favours in terms of preparation. But, you know, it is where it is. I think ideally Monte Carlo and Rome are the key pillars of his French Open preparation. But so long as he can be in okay shape for Rome, I still put him as favourite. But there are question marks there, for sure.
Yeah. I understand Taylor Fritz is playing Miami. And there's no stopping that bloke. I had a quick word with Paul Annacone, actually, and he said he would play every week if it was up to him. He just loves playing. And
I love that.
You know, I mean, I looked up to see whether he typically plays Monte Carlo, because I'm always fascinated and mindful of what Brad Gilbert says about how American players just don't play Monte Carlo anymore, and it really winds him up because he thinks it does them no favours. And the last two times they've held Monte Carlo, Fritz has been there. You know, he will, and he's intending to play that event again this year, and he would come over, then go back again, and then come over for the rest of it.
Fritz and Tommy Paul, they quite like the clay, don't they?
Mm, yeah,
so, no, good for
that's
them.
That's right. So, hopefully we have happier news on the injury front for Rafa Nadal and many other players. But today the show was all about Ash Barty, really, wasn't it? And she's a player that, if she doesn't pick up a racket again, has given us the richest of memories. And thank goodness for YouTube, so we can go and get a bit of a bit of a feel of it anytime we fancy from years gone by. But wish her all the very best for the future. So, we'll be back on Monday. We will just remind you that our mascot for this week is Shadow Waddo, the 11-year-old Labrador retriever owned by Dan and Andrea. Why is Catherine laughing?
You can't not. I mean, do Dan and Andrea laugh every time they say Shadow Waddo? I hope so.
It's an amazing
name. It brings
a
smile to their faces every time.
Marvellous. Maybe brilliant. I could be David Wavid. No, all right.
Reminds me of Scousel Mousel.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a thing here on the Tennis Podcast.
Or Shawaddy Waddy. Weren't they a band?
They were.
What it makes me think of. Yeah.
Not really your era, Catherine, but you know.
No, but I'm aware of them.
Okay, aware of the work. Darwin is my mascot. Carter's Catherine's. Gerald the Cat is Matt's. Billie Jean King sponsors Billie Jean the Dog, who's very happily back at Tennis Podcast Towers with Catherine.
But in ball skills news, while she was away, she's learnt how to play cricket. For real, folks. For real.
We've seen videos.
Yeah. She knows the instruction, bowler's end.
Yeah. She has Carlos Alcaraz speed, I'm telling you. and she's also sponsored by Alana Klass, who had her birthday yesterday. So happy birthday for yesterday, Alana. Chris Albert Lee and Carl Weingartner are our executive producers and very much top blokes. And Matt, we have shout outs.
We do. We have Susan Officer, who is from Sydney, Ooh. Australia.
Oh, well, Ooh. Very fitting. Susan, thank you for your support and thank you for being a shout out and a friend on a day when we need a bit of Aussies pulling together with us all so that we can cope.
Mm. Yes. Hello, Susan. Great name. Thank you very much for your support.
We also have Anne Fitzpatrick O'Rourke from Dublin. And Anne says, I treated myself to this subscription as a wedding present to myself. So this is my first time using my new name.
Oh,
that's so amazing.
I love that.
That's so touching, Anna. Thank you
I
so much.
I hope your husband has also taken either Fitzpatrick or O'Rourke, whatever yours is. Answers on a postcard, let me know.
carry on, Matt.
And finally, we have Jafia Binders, who is from Hungary, but currently living Ooh. In Munich. And Jafia may well be doing the dishes at the moment because she says, I really hate doing the dishes. I always end up doing them super late and I generally listen to the tennis podcast while I do them. Aww. Thank you for making the time pass faster.
I'm glad Aww. You had an explanation for why she might be doing the dishes because I worry that it was just she's always doing the dishes, which is she's no way to live your life. But I've been to Hungary. Budapest, one of my favourite European cities. Lovely stuff.
Hungary via Munich. I just love it. I love how international our audience is. I love hearing about where you're all from and what you're all doing and when you're listening. So thanks so much for letting us know. And thank you for being friends of the Tennis Podcast, those of you that are, because you're the people that help us do all this, produce it year round, produce all the weekly shows and these emergency shows like this one and the dailies at the Grand Slams. We're already planning our next two Grand Slam tournaments and we want to do as much as we possibly can. We've also got lots of new, exciting shows, hopefully exciting shows anyway, for Friends of the Tennis Podcast. There's loads of them already up there as well. If you want to be able to become a friend, if you're not yet, there's about 7 shows already waiting for you that aren't available anywhere else. So thanks so much for all of you for your support. We will be back on Monday. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.